everyone, and welcome to the Women of Xbox UK podcast. I'm Charlie from the Xbox UK team, and I'm ready to round off June with another superstar speaker joining me today. She is head of game creator experience and ecosystem at Microsoft. It is the truly stunning Sarah Bond. Hello, Sarah.
Well, hello.
Hello.
I think you're the one who's... I said you're the one who's stunning.
Stop, but also
I don't think I've ever
carry
had
on.
Call me that.
That's two episodes in a row as well. Kiki had some nice things to say about my makeup, so maybe I should just do this podcast for my own self-esteem. Mm-hmm. You know,
it could be, but
yeah, exactly.
you are stunning. Well, thank you for having me.
Honestly, so wonderful to have you here. We'll unpick this in a little bit, but the time we're talking to you is pretty significant in your day-to-day job. But before we get on to that, why don't we get a very quick elevator pitch of actually who you are and what it is that you do?
Who I am? Well, that's quite
It's quite,
by the way, it's really hard, and I might start slipping into a British accent because I actually did spend quite a bit of time growing up in the UK, and I am going to drink my tea while we talk just because I love green tea.
Fully embrace the UK part in the Xbox UK podcast. I'm all in.
I assume that's why I was asked. I was like, they figured out that I came up through
they
British system.
Because
a couple of years ago, I went to this leadership training, and you were supposed to write this encapsulation of who you were at the end, and I had a really hard time with it, and I had to take 3 more weeks to write it, and I basically concluded that if there were any short words that encapsulated who I was, I would say that I make people feel more included. That was if there were any words that were like sitting on my tombstone at the end of the day, that I wanted that to be what characterized what type of friend I was, what type of mother I am, what type of boss I am, what type of peer I am. So that's probably who I am. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, I like it. I really love that, actually. That's a really lovely answer.
In terms of what I do, so I lead all of Microsoft's relationships with game creators. And we say creators because it encapsulates both developers and publishers, with Microsoft and all of the tools and services they use of ours, in particular Xbox, and all the business relationships associated with that. So most of that is about Xbox, but there's also some really cool stuff we're doing with Azure and Visual Basic and stuff like that. And I spent a ton of time curating our content portfolio for Xbox on games that come to the Windows Store, and of course, all of Game Pass.
So a pretty important job all around, I'm going to say. And here, I think I'm going to ask you about you as a gamer, since, you know, your day to day is so integral in reaching out to other gamers and giving us the games that we want to play. So what I'm going to do is ask you some sort of quick, rapid fire questions. And I want you to see if you can give me the first answer that comes to your head. All right.
Okay. That's going to be hard.
Perfect. Nah, you'll be fine. You'll smash it. Question number one. What is the first game you ever remember playing?
King's Quest 2.
Boom. Amazing. Do you have a scenario around that? Where were we when we played that then?
Okay, so I started playing, I think I was 6 or 7. My dad had an IBM PC, and we played King's Quest 2 together. And, you know, it's all about finding these keys and unlocking a castle where I think a princess is. Uh-huh. And it didn't even have audio. Like, it only had, like, typed dialogue. Mm-hmm. And the world, you kind of would circle round and round in it. I don't know if you played this game, but the world was so small, you
I'm
could like
aware
lap
of it,
yourself.
Have. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. And he would have me read the dialogue out loud. But that was my first memory of the game. I played many, many games after that, but I always remember that time.
That's the first. Absolutely. Okay, so question number two. What is without a doubt the best game you've ever played?
It's tough because I don't know what the other adjectives you're going to use to describe other games are, and I want to make sure I get some of them in. So I'm just going to slot this one here. I would say Ori Will of the Wisps, I think.
Uh-huh. Was there something special about that?
It's just beautiful. I mean, sometimes I would just like pause the game and stare at it. And the stories about love and family and caring for one another and overcoming your fears. Just love that game.
It's such a lovely game that tears your heart apart within the first 2 minutes of it as well. It's a special one.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God bless it. Right, okay, question three. What is a game that you love now, but you wish more people had played or even knew about it?
I recently played this game called Lost Words Beyond the Page.
Okay.
A game about, have you heard of it? It's like a girl is writing in her diary, and then you play the story that she's writing in her diary. And it's just amazing.
I think my friend recommended it to me because he'd heard Phil recommend it. And so that's sort of where I'm getting that from, is me and my brain saying, well, Phil says I should play it, and now Sarah says I should play it. So I guess that's...
So what are you going to do this weekend?
I'm going to play it is what I think I'm going to do.
And you can play through it in, 3 to 4 hours. It's that type of game. It's almost more like, it's like an experience. It's awesome. And I want everyone to experience it because it's really makes you think. And it's, the girl is actually, she's British.
Oh, well.
And it's about her.
Very relatable.
Perfect. Very relatable.
It's on the list. Okay, question four. What is the one game that made you rage the hardest? Ori would probably also work there, knowing my experience with the game, that is.
Yeah, that might be true. All right, I'll give it to Ori. It is quite hard.
Ori's gonna get it.
Yeah,
perfect. And I don't need to ask any more questions on that. Completely understand. But go on.
Oh no, so we're done with the games questions?
There's one more to go.
Okay, because I've got a game that I'm hoping qualifies for the next question.
Okay, let's have a look. So the final question is, who is your favorite gaming character or villain? Does that apply in there, do we think?
No. No. But I'm going to give you a new question to ask the next person. So, my favorite gaming character or villain?
I say it every episode, but villains are my favorite. So I have to put that in there because villains are the best. You know when you've got a good villain.
I think it might be Master Chief for character.
He's good one, huh?
Yeah, Steady Eddie, you know?
I've never heard anyone call him a Steady Eddie before. I'm going to make sure Kiki knows that he's got that adjective from you and that needs to be featured in anything she works on. Steady Eddie, day one. Brilliant. Love it. Now,
I was hoping you were going to ask me what my favorite game was in college.
I mean, it's very specific, but I can reiterate that question to you now if you have a good answer for it. Okay, Sarah Bond, what was your favorite game that you played at college? Do you have one?
I happen to. Why, thank you for asking. GoldenEye, 4-player, college.
There you go. And was that like a LAN situation? You'd all get around together and play,
Well, we actually played on the N64, if I'm remembering it correctly, with 4 controllers. You do 4-player. Mm-hmm. You would turn off the radar so that people couldn't track you were, and you would try and, hunt each other down.
I don't think I ever played GoldenEye, but it's another one of those ones that I just know was sort of
it's a classic. So good. It's so classic. It's totally worth a play. I highly recommend it.
Right, another one for the list then. I'll dig me N64 out and see if I can play on that then. So I did mention that in the last episode we spoke to Kiki, and one of the things we like to do on this podcast is make sure our previous guest has a question for our next guest, and you've got quite the doozy. Kiki wants to know, who would you most want to jump into a session of Overcooked with? I know. These are such serious questions.
No, so first of all, just as context for you, I did FanFest this weekend because it was right before our E3 showcase. And somebody asked, what's a game you really lost yourself in? Mm-hmm. And I answered Overcooked 2. So I don't know.
Wow.
Kiki couldn't have possibly have known that I would have given that answer. But because I always play with my family. Uh-huh. So 100% my husband is who I would want to jump into a game of Overcooked 2 with. Very good teamwork. We always get better the more we try. Like, we're very complimentary. And I sort of like asking him to wash the dishes faster.
Brilliant. Okay, so now we're actually going to start to talk about you more as an individual. But before we do start, when, you know, the place I do like to start is right back in the early days, I do want to actually bring up this gorgeous picture that we found of you. It was created by artist DrawStoreHH, and it was shared on the official Xbox Instagram account for Women's History Month. And I just want that to be up there because the storyline we are about to talk to is going to essentially end in this picture, in this iconic female role in the industry that we've all come to know and love of you, Sarah. And I just very quickly want to sort of touch upon how it feels to be perceived the way that you are, especially when artwork like this is produced of yourself.
You know, sometimes it feels surreal. Honestly, mm-hmm. Like I just see myself as me, you know, I don't feel any different than I did 10 years ago or 20 years ago. I know what all of my fears and worries are, all the things that I don't think I do well. It's so sometimes I see a picture like this of me, or I know that people might look up to me or admire what I do. And it's sort of mind blowing. Mm-hmm. It's funny, I showed that picture to my husband. He goes, "Is that meant to be you?" I was like, "I love you too, honey. I love you."
Oh, bless him. Well, I'll tell you what, let's unpick the person in the picture then. Let's take this right back to the beginning and have a look at how you actually got started in the industry. Because you had you started off in life doing a bit of globetrotting. Like, what was all of that about?
There was a person who had run business development for the gaming organization for years and years, and he announced he was retiring. And Phil was interested in finding someone to succeed him who had worked in wireless, had worked maybe in cable, new subscriptions, new consumer. Mm-hmm. And I got introduced to Phil as a result. It was sort of serendipity, honestly, because I had worked all in consumer, all in subscription for years and years. Says, gosh, I really want that skill set because it's going to be about Game Pass. It's going to be about making gaming playable across devices. Mm-hmm. And we met and it just sort of clicked. And then I did a whole bunch of interviews with the team. And that's how I came to Team Xbox. But you're right. There was a lot of globetrotting with my job because I get to work with developers and publishers all around the world.
Mm-hmm. But that wasn't your first sort of move into the tech industry, was it? Like before there was Xbox, you did.
No.
You mentioned T-Mobile, like you've been all over the place. Mm-hmm.
I actually started out my career at McKinsey. I worked in consulting and I did all my work in consumer tech. And it was sort of before there was such a thing as consumer tech. Like I got out of business school and I announced that that's what I wanted to do. And people were like, but that doesn't exist. Like at the time, it seems funny now, but you know, Facebook wasn't out there. Google hadn't IPO'd. There was no iPhone. I think the coolest phone was a Motorola Razr at the time.
Okay. Those were great phones, by the way.
They were great phones. I also loved my little Nokia. And so back then, most of the tech industry was commercial, but I was like, I really think I see an opportunity here. So I did a ton of work with companies all around the country, all around the globe, actually. I did some work in Korea. I lived in Spain for a year. I moved to Seattle and I was doing a lot of work at T-Mobile as a consultant. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to the CEO one day and he goes, you know what, do you think you'd like to come and be my chief of staff? And I just thought, wow, that would be so cool. To get to actually work and be part of the executive team of a Fortune 100 company. So I sort of pressed the eject button. I was pregnant. I was 4 months pregnant when I did it, which, by the way, is a little bit of a crazy way to move jobs. And I joined T-Mobile, which was great.
So what did you do over at T-Mobile? We'll touch on it very lightly, but I mean, you were there for a fair bit and it's a significantly large company to be a part of. Was there any transferable skills you took from that to Xbox?
Gosh, so many. So I was there for 6 years. I started out, I was the chief of staff to the CEO. Mm-hmm. Then I was the VP of strategy. Then I became the SVP of strategy. Then I started leading strategy of business development and new business ventures. I sort of just did various jobs over time. I had both my kids there, which was incredible. And I nursed both of them to 12 months, which is probably what I'm most proud of.
Absolutely.
But there was a ton of things. I mean, one was just the experience of being on a management team and seeing, if you work on like a subset of a business, you can understand that specific thing like finance or marketing or operations and what it takes. But it's really incredible to think about the compilation of things and how you stitch them all together. So I really valued the experience of just seeing all of that.
Yeah. Instead of just being siloed, right?
Mm-hmm. And how you bring it all together. Mm-hmm. And then I got a ton of experience just in how to think about consumer behavior, how to think about disaggregating out economics. I could go kind of geeky, but from a unit economics perspective, high fixed investment cost, low variable marginal ongoing cost. But I am going kind of geeky. So, honestly, but all of these things.
We love the geek, just so you know, around these all parts. Of these never things are hold back super... the geek.
I love math. Okay. Like I love math. I just like to make everything mathematical. So all of these things have actually translated really well over into us being a subscription business. T-Mobile was not the number one. It was actually the number four carrier in the United States when I started there. It's now the number two carrier in the United States. And so there's something about knowing what it's like to fight and have big competitors. And I feel that with Xbox too, honestly. That is one thing I like, is sort of, you know, and carving a position in the industry that's all about putting the customer at the center. And that's what T-Mobile was all about. And that's what Xbox is all about. So a lot of those similarities I also really, really love. And I like to get to apply them here every day.
Yeah, totally. So then let's take this now from T-Mobile, where, you know, you did loads of legwork, absolutely nerded out on maths every single day. How did we get over to Microsoft? What was that step like?
Okay, so what happened was I had been at T-Mobile for like 6 years. And I started thinking, I was like, well, what do I want to do next? Mm-hmm. Like, I could stay here and I could keep doing this and I really understand this. And I wrote a list of things down that I really wanted to do next. I said, okay, well, I've been in a very, as we said, kind of cerebral, mathematical world. I want to learn other parts of leadership now. I want to learn what it means to lead at scale or lead organizations, large organizations, or work for a charismatic leader. So that I wrote that down. I realized I wanted to work at a global company, that wireless companies, by their very nature, are always geographically bound because they're regulated and there's spectrum involved and all these things. So you don't get to work globally. I wanted that. And I wanted to work at a company that actually builds software, not one that just sort of transferred the, you know, build, you know, make the bits, don't transfer the bits. So I wrote these three things down on a piece of paper and I just sort of forgot about it for a minute.
Manifest.
And then one day, yes, I know, I sent it out into the universe. And one day I got this email that said that Microsoft was interested in talking to me. And actually Peggy Johnson was interested in talking to me. She ran business development for Microsoft. Now T-Mobile is actually in Seattle. Yeah, I know. I was like, I need more lists. I would like a house in Hawaii and a yacht. So hasn't worked yet. I still got it written down. So
keep on making them lists, Sarah.
Yeah, I'll keep working on it. So Microsoft and T-Mobile are actually both located in the Seattle area. So I was like, Eva, this is super easy. So I went over and I met with her. I met with members of her team. And it actually played out over about 8 months because there wasn't actually a specific role that they had for me. They just were interested in my profile, thought I might be a good talent to get into the company. And then one day she calls me and she says, okay. She's like, I've created a role for you for basically the research group. Mm-hmm. And so that is actually how I came over to Microsoft. And then the second part of the story, which I started telling you earlier, I was skipping ahead too far. Sorry. messed it up. Was that then the opportunity came up for me to move over into gaming. And that sort of all worked out.
And that's where you are. I mean, you've moved on a little bit since then, though, haven't you? There's been a couple extra steps along the way.
Yes. So I first did business development for gaming, and that was frankly just a huge transformational role for me. I went, you know, I moved companies, I got a global team, I got a team that drives operational work because we make sure we do all the work to make sure the titles ship. I got a technical team, meeting with publishers all around the world, like so much change, huge, huge. And I did that for about 2.5 years, maybe 3 years. I lose track of time at this point. I don't know about you. and then I was talking with Phil and Satya about all the opportunity I saw with game developers, just with the work that I did. And they said, look, we really need someone to look at game developers holistically, and not just the business relationship side, which is what I was doing, but also all the technical aspects, and also think about it on behalf of Microsoft, not just Xbox. And we really feel like you're the right person for that role, given everything you've done, all the context you have in your head. And so I was like, are you sure?
You know, like, me?
You want me? Okay. So, but it just sounded like a great opportunity to get to do both business and engineering and to lead product teams and to, you know, have Microsoft-wide impact. I took that role and I've been in it for a year, which is what we call gaming ecosystem is the name of the team, and creator experience.
Amazing. And this is actually the point, you know, where we're going to move more into this role specifically, because there's loads of stuff to touch on in what you've just said. And I actually here, I really want to show a clip. So if you are listening to this podcast, which hello, if you are listening on Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple or Google Podcasts, we are over there. Did you know we have a Microsoft YouTube channel where you can actually see our wonderful faces? I would recommend right now looking at your timestamp, heading over to YouTube, because we're going to be showing you a clip from Sarah doing a speech at DICE back in 2019 that I think really lovely sort of captures the essence of your role. So we're going to play that now and we'll have a chat with you when we come back, all right?
I'm playing as mom, but I'm also playing with an inside view of our industry. And the thing I'm most struck by when I'm doing that is how different yet the same video games are to when I first started. They're the same because they deepen connections, parents and children, spouses and siblings, friends, roommates. But they're also different, and that now, more than ever, they have the power to connect people who otherwise would have never met. So I was talking about this with John Henke, the CEO of Niantic. He hears stories all the time about people around the world connecting with Pokemon Go. So two strangers will be out and they'll be hunting the same Pokemon, and then suddenly they'll realize they're actually doing the same thing. And they connect in a way they never otherwise would have. They form bonds, and oftentimes that leads to deep, real-world friendships. We see and read about this all the time. A message on Twitter. I've known these guys for years. We've played together on Xbox Live, and finally we've met together and seen each other in person the first time. Or, my husband and I, we met playing games, and now we played side by side in our living room. We've got two TVs set up, two consoles. That human connection, it's the heart and soul of gaming. We hear it in the stories, and we experience it in our lives.
I really loved that clip. I think it speaks to something really, really true, especially with the year that we've just had. And one of the final lines you said was that human connection is the sort of heart and soul of gaming. And I'd love to unpack your thoughts on that a little bit more, both, you know, bearing in mind the year we have just had, but also how you were already thinking about this before the year that we've just had.
Yeah, thanks for asking that. You know, human connection is what life is about, really. I mean, there is,
absolutely, yeah.
Really, it is just a compilation of experiences. But when I reflect on what I see that makes gaming truly special, it's that it is something that is best experienced and in some ways can only be experienced with another person. And that it has, you know, these ways that you can grow. Or even if you're playing single player, you're really still experiencing somebody else's perspective, and you get to walk in their shoes or experience something that they wanted you to see. And I agree, like this last year has shown us that more than ever, but that's what it always was for me from the very beginning, where I was playing King's Quest II with my dad to now watching my kids play Minecraft with their friends. And it has been pretty amazing this last year to see the world see that about gaming and for it to be the source of this source of safe peace and joy and human connection, or a form of entertainment that can help you learn and grow in addition to doing something fun. And that's what it's always meant to me.
I love it. Like I think I said this in one of the previous episodes, but I very recently, in the last few months of the pandemic and the lockdown here in the UK, I've got closer to my mum in the sense of she's always known I've been into games, and me and my dad were the side that we bonded on. But to her, games were always the FIFA that dad was playing or the Call of Duty that I was playing. And sort of I opened her eyes to Game Pass and to Among mm-hmm. Us and Golf with Your Friends. And she absolutely loved it because she didn't realize that gaming was anything more than what she'd seen previously. And because of that, we've had game nights where my seven-year-old, not my seven, she's nine. Wow, did I just get her age wrong? My nine-year-old has murdered my parents in Among Us, and it's actually brought us together, and it's been such a lovely thing that we've shared together. And, you know, firsthand mm-hmm. sort of showing my parents, who thought they were out of touch with what gaming was and what it meant to be social, that it works for them too, it's such a lovely feeling. And the fact that you just get to do that and think about how to expand that for everyone on a daily basis must be so enlightening.
Yeah, it is enlightening. The thing too that's really also sort of clicked in my mind is that we create empathy for each other through shared experience, mm-hmm. and how gaming can also bring together people who may not speak the same language, you don't know what they look like, you don't have to be in the same time zone, and you can share an achievement, not just simply like watch something, but actually achieve something in conjunction with someone else who may be completely different than you. Because you see, you're not actually completely different. Sometimes the world likes to tell us we're all completely different, but in fact, we have far more in common than we have apart. Yeah. And it sort of takes those things and shows them to you. And in today's world, where there is so much that is fraught that is going on, and mm-hmm. there are so many times when we are asked to focus on our divisions, I love that about gaming. And I actually think it has a very important role to play in society because it is so unique in that way.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you wrote something, I mean, sort of in a similar vein to this, for games industry recently, where you spoke on the specifics of also democratizing game development for small teams. And I wonder if you could, you know, explain a little bit for those who may not have read the article yet, what that means to you and the work that you do on that.
Yeah, so, you know, one thing about society in general is that what you see is there are patterns where economic opportunity and opportunity to be seen, to have an equal seat at the table, is steered towards some groups over others. And who those groups are changes over and over again over time, right? Based off of temporal factors, based off of societal factors. Yeah. But it is a human habit. There's just no getting around that, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I look at game development, I say, okay, well, the opportunity we have as Microsoft and Xbox, with all the tools and services we have, is we make it more possible for everybody to be able to create, right? And if you make it possible that, you know, you take away the disproportionate steering and you say, look, everyone can have these tools. Everyone can have a dev team. Someone can have an idea for a game and actually bring it to fruition, and they can build it and distribute it and build an audience over the world. And you don't necessarily have to be a massive team, or you don't necessarily have to have a known IP. That when you do that in gaming, because of what I was talking about earlier, that it has such a unique opportunity to create shared empathy, you truly can change the world, right? Because we are a product of like the stories and history and what we see and understand. And if you can see and understand more distinct experiences, you will have more empathy and perspective. And over again, I see these patterns where people will like say, well, my perspective is right. And another person says, well, my perspective is right. And then the divisions get dug in and people aren't actually communicating. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that both perspectives are totally valid. It's just they simply have not been allowed to exist in the same plane. That if you could bring them together and you can look at all of these different perspectives that people have, that then you can truly have a 360 degree of the world. So as you know, my team, what we're doing is we're making it possible to be on an equal playing field. And I find that just extremely motivating. I mean, you said you have a daughter who's nine. I also have a daughter who's nine. You know,
I have a son who's six.
Yeah, they should play Minecraft together. But, you know, and I look at them and I just say, gosh, in the end, I want to make the world a better place for them and all children. And I want them to see the full breadth and the beauty of everything that there is in the world and what it means to be human. And if we can do work and I can do work on my team to make that more possible, then, you know, it is a career, you know, well lived, a life well spent.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more. And there's elements of like the Idea Xbox program here. But one of the main things I do sort of want to talk about here is also your work with Game Pass has done that hugely. I would argue, whilst I might not have the correct words to sort of to get out of my head right now, but fundamentally, every single person I think I've spoken to about Game Pass agrees that it has changed the way that they game. It's changed the games that they would engage with. And I wonder if you just want to touch a little bit on, you know, what you are to Game Pass and what Game Pass is to you, because you two are, you know, you're pretty much right next to each other, aren't you?
That's so cute. Well, I met Game Pass about 4 years ago.
We super liked each other and it was just
super
up
liked
from
each
there.
Other, but Game Pass was just starting out. No, so look, Game Pass, what Game Pass is, it's a library of games. And I quickly learned when I took my role that that library was supposed to come from me and my team. And we were supposed to work with the entire gaming ecosystem to curate that portfolio. And also my team does all of the business development for Matt Booty and Xbox Game Studios as well. And that was actually inclusive of that, right? Because there were a bunch of work that we had to do with all the studio titles to make sure we had the rights to put it in subscription and then work with our third-party partners. And when we first started out, you know, partners were a little bit concerned about Game Pass. They expressed concerns about what was it going to do to the business model? What was it going to do to their bottom line? What did it mean for the industry? And so I was right on the front lines of working through that. And one of the first things I did is I said, well, look, guys, we've really actually got to bring accurate data that shows partners what happens when titles go into Game Pass and shows that it's actually beneficial for them. And we did just that. And what we see consistently over and over again is that engagement in titles, like the number of people play it, the hours played, right, goes up about 8 times when games enter into Game Pass. And that subscribers actually get deeper into loving gaming. 9 out of 10 subscribers say that they played a game in Game Pass they otherwise would have never tried. Game Pass subscribers play 30% more genres and 40% more games. And so it really accelerates the ability for games to be seen and discovered. So it totally goes back to what you were talking about earlier, which is we see creators now who are knocking down the door wanting to get into Game Pass. And we see people being more willing to take a risk, right? Like it's possible to be successful with, you know, with something besides a known IP because they know they're going to find an audience through the subscription. And so we really, you know, as the time went on, like Game Pass has really been built to something that is amazing for players. Like it's this incredible player value, but is also amazing for creators because they can be more easily discovered. They can build their business. They can build up their brand all in partnership with us.
I love it. And, you know, in case anyone was living under a rock this weekend, or at least when we filmed this, hello, it is 3 days after E3. And this weekend, we announced 27 new games that were coming to Game Pass. We do have a clip because you were one of the incredibly lucky people who actually got to be on the official E3 stage this year at the Xbox and Bethesda showcase. There you are. I mean, I'm going to very, very selfishly ask you a question about, you know, how amazing is it? I know it's not the proper stage, but to be on that stage and to represent Xbox must be a bucket list for me. I'll tell you that for a start.
It is amazing. It's also sometimes a bit intimidating. Like, I'm like, oh, I don't want to mess up. I want to make sure I represent the team well. Yeah. You know, when Phil suggested to me that I be at the beginning of the show, I was like, are you sure? but it's awesome. But it's just awesome to represent the incredible work that we all do and to talk about Bethesda, which was a huge part of it for me because I managed them as a partner for years and years and knew that whole team for years and years because that was my job. And now they actually are part of Team Xbox. So it's an honor to get to do things like that.
And what a show it was. I mean, Bethesda had an absolutely huge appearance at it. Shout out for me specifically being Redfall, that looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
The first second of what we saw from that game after Phil introduced it, and it was just there for me. I don't know if there were any specific call-outs for you of anything that stood out and that, you know, us gamers should make sure we play when it hits Game Pass.
Well, look, I love seeing Starfield open the show. There's just no getting over it. And having Todd open the show, you know, that was huge. And it was pretty cool to get to introduce Stalker 2. I am mesmerized by that game. And I also love just having the unique cultural voice that is in that game in our show and coming into Game Pass. It's just another point that I was making earlier about the diversity of stories to be told. I mean, at the end, when the guy is talking about the land, it's just so, you know, it's just beautiful. I love that stuff.
I'm again very jealous. I will be coming for your spot next year. Fingers crossed.
I'll be watching my back.
I'll be nipping at your ankles to get on there instead. But at this point, I actually want to sort of unpack the wider conversation about you know how brilliant it was to actually see you on that stage and move more into a conversation about you as a strong Black woman, as a mother, and to reiterate, a woman in the industry, which is what this podcast is all here to talk about. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, one name that stood out earlier when we were talking was Peggy, and how she sort of helped you get into the career you're in. And I would love to talk more about, you know, what it was like to work with Peggy, anything that she sort of imbued with you about how important it is to work with other women, but also to sort of, to use a weird metaphor, like put the ladder down and let other women come up and join you. Do you have any thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, you know, Peggy is the first woman I ever reported to in my career, which in and of itself, when I reflect on it and say those words, is sort of sad, right? And tells you how far we have to go. Then the thing that she did that was really beautiful and generous is, like, here I am. I come to Microsoft. Microsoft is a huge and intimidating company at the outset. It's just so many people work here. And she really invested in making it possible for me to easily meet people, for me to learn the culture, for exposing me to different things so that when it was my turn to be out in front, it made it easier for me to do. So one thing she did is, there was this weekly meeting with Satya where we would review deals, and she would just have me sit in it because she said, look, I just want you to get exposure. I want you to see how the conversations go. And I've actually never had anyone do that for me before. It's always like the first time, if you're going to be in the meeting, you have to present. But you know, that makes it so hard to actually learn from the meeting because you're just thinking about, okay, what am I going to say? What am I going to say?
Have I got everything ready? How do I screen share?
And, and instead, I could just kind of sit there and learn and listen. And I was in this very early meeting, maybe it's like 3 weeks into coming to Microsoft. And there was this team that had lost an Azure deal. And the customer, or the potential customer, I should say, had written an email laying out the reasons why Microsoft had lost the deal. And the exec comes in and he projects it up on the screen and shows it to Satya. And I mean, in the email is like a trail of tears of all of these mistakes that we had made. And I'm stunned, having come from the previous culture I was in. I'm like, are you gonna really show him that? Right? Because yeah, I am gonna show him that. And I see Satya and he calmly reads through the email and he goes, that's really unfortunate. We're going to work on that, right? And, you know, guy replies, yep, we're going to work on it. And I was just,
wow.
I was so inspired. Like, every other CEO I'd ever seen would have pounded the table, would have said probably some pretty unkind things to the people in the room. And I thought, you know what, that is inspiring. Like, and I want to be like that one day. That's the type of leader I could be. You don't have having a high standard in not treating others with dignity and respect. Do you know, sometimes people think that you can be one or the other and you can't. And that's just not the case. And so I'm so grateful to her for all those experiences. There was another time she went on a trip to India as Microsoft's representative, And she took me with her, and I learned so much just about the art of diplomacy, about meeting people in their culture, about talking to them about what you're trying to do, about listening to their feedback. I just saw her do it over and over and over again. And that's such a gift. And I remember the first time I went on a trip for Xbox to Japan, as you know, the Xbox emissary. And I thought, okay, I just gotta remember what Peggy did.
Be more Peggy.
Yes, be more Peggy. So that was an incredible experience. And to just have her as a mentor and a sponsor. She's since left Microsoft. She's the CEO of her own company. But to this day, you know, she's still someone who I talk to, who I could reach out to for advice. And that was a real gift and always will be.
Yeah, it just sounds like just opening the doors and letting people look in. I think it's really important. Like, I remember when I started at Microsoft and I was sat in my first few meetings in the background because I had someone very similar who was just letting me be there. And it was actually really comforting because I don't know if many of the listeners know this, but Microsoft like to use a lot of acronyms. So every acronym that came my way, I was in a Discord conversation with the person who let me in. And I was like, right, what's this one? What's that one? What the hell does that mean? Who's that? And they just explained it all to me, and they didn't make me feel at any point like I was a nuisance or I was in the way. It was like, you lack the knowledge, you're asking for the knowledge, and here it is. And I felt like, you know, my growth in Microsoft was huge right at the beginning, because I was allowed to just question and be really curious. And I'm so glad Peggy gave you that too. Wonderful. And so another thing I did really want to pick up is, you know, in looking around and, you know, figuring out the many wonderful facets of Sarah Bond to talk about, there was an article I found on Thrive Global called My Black Man, and it speaks about you as not just a mother, but as a mother of a black man. And I, you know what, I'm not even going to put words in my mouth. I'd love for you to tell us more about what it meant to you to write that article, in addition to what the article's about and what it speaks to.
I wrote that about a year ago, in the wake of the riots that were taking place after the murder of George Floyd. And, you know, I was just torn apart by that. And I was mainly torn apart because, you know, he was not the first and he won't be the last. Maybe it was horrible. The first time the world chose to see it. But it's very real, and it had always been very real for me, but I had always sort of wrestled with trying to explain that to people. So many times people would say to me, oh, but you don't experience racism, Sarah. You know, you don't have to worry about that. But that wasn't actually my life. You know, like, I've been pulled over for driving my car into work. I've been discriminated against. I've been targeted. And while, you know, in the work context, people can think, oh my gosh, well, she's Sarah Bond, you know, like kind of like what you were saying earlier, like when I walk down the street, there's people who don't see me as an equal human being. And when my son was born, you know, I first had my daughter and, you know, and then, and I have my own worries for my daughter. But, you know, Black men are, you know, and it's shown pretty systematically targeted. And so when my son was born, you know, I first felt this just like this wave of joy. And then I thought, my gosh, how am I going to do this? How do I teach him to walk through the world as both optimistic and realistic? You know, how do I teach him how to stay alive? And that might sound extreme, but unfortunately, I don't think it was. And I wanted to just describe that feeling to every mother in the world. Because if every mother in the world gets that, which I think every mother in the world wants that for their children, I believe that we can change it.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. And like, one of the things you talk about, you know, being on the E3 stage and sort of preparing yourself for, I think the words you chose were hate-filled rhetoric being spewed at yourself. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about how incredible it feels, but also, you know, the fact that unfortunately it is still scary for you, and you hear that these things happen. You know, is there things that we can do as a community to wipe this from existence and just move the heck on and celebrate everyone within our industry equally. And this speaks on behalf, you know, I'm very passionate about, I'm a bisexual woman, you know, I'm part of the LGBTQIA plus community. And that's another community I care hugely about that also are scared to be themselves in this industry. And I just wanted to ask if you have any thoughts and you know, change isn't going to happen overnight and certainly not by the end of this year, but what direction do we need to be going in and what advice do you have for these communities to get there?
Well, don't give up, you know? I am a big reason why I did do E3, and I'm actually quite introverted, if you must know, although I might not come across that way. Why I do podcasts, why I'm talking to you right now is, you know, if you normalize the idea that a leader, an executive in any industry, in the gaming industry, can look any way and can come in any package, if you normalize it, that's half the battle. That part of the reason why these preconceptions exist is that we fuel them, right? And if you only show people one version of the world, then they actually begin to believe that that is the only version of the world that can exist. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, that's part of what I would say is my fight, is just for everyone to see that there are so many different versions of what it means to be successful, to what it means to drive change, to what it means to contribute. And so my number one piece of advice to people is don't give up. Don't let anybody else tell you what you are, what you can do, and what you cannot do, that you own your destiny.
Sarah, you're making me very emotional right now. I don't know if you're feeling that too. I'm feeling very like empowered and sort of disappointed that we're still having these conversations, but I do also feel like we are on the precipice of fixing it, because we do have individuals such as yourself, as Katie, as Louise, and every single person we've had on this podcast, this series, who are on the forefront and saying it might have been like that, but it certainly is not anymore, and I am here to tell you why. And unfortunately, at this climax of our conversation, in which I'm feeling very teary-eyed, I have to say that that is the end of the podcast. And you have really been... I know! I mean, if you want to come back for another season, unfortunately, that is what we have time for, Sarah. I'm going to cry all over again. But I do have one very, very important thing to ask you before we do go. And that is, as I said at the top of the podcast, Kiki Wolfkill asked you a question, and I would love for you to ask a question for our next guest. Now, while this is the last episode of this season, fingers crossed, I know, you know, what we're working towards for season two, and I'm not going to let you know, and I'm not going to let the listeners know, but I would love to have a question from you on whatever topic you want to ask.
Okay. Yeah,
take it away.
Okay, well, I'm going to stay in the theme of being really deep. So here's my question, which is, what is your purpose on the planet, and how do you want to realize it through your work?
Wow. Okay. You were not kidding on the deep part. <that way. laughs>
You'll tell me who the poor person is, will you?
I will. I'll let you know and be like, by the way, this is who you've stitched up with that question. Incredible. Well, Sarah, thank you again for today. Thank you for your question. I cannot wait to see how our next guest will answer that. To everyone who's listened, if you've listened to only this episode, please go check out everything else. I promise you there is some truly magnificent guests this season. You can watch every episode on the Microsoft UK YouTube channel. You can hear them all on pretty much anywhere you get your podcasts from. But from me, that is it. Sarah, thank you again.
Thank you.
Incredible. And as I said, I will be stood next to you on a stage, hopefully one day soon.
I look forward to it. And if it happens, I'm going to have to do something more interesting with my hair.
Love it. Right. That's your challenge then. I need to get on stage. You need to do something with your hair. Brilliant.
I do.
Cheers, Sarah. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye.